Hey everyone, it's Dave. Before we get into today's episode, I just want to let everybody know that not only do I give my books away for free, but I pay for shipping. I'll sign it, send it to you. Just go to shipmeyourbook.com. Shipmeyourbook.com. Enjoy my book. Thanks so much. Hey everyone, it's Monday, so we've got another edition of Road to Revenue series. And today's episode is on being vulnerable, not perfect. And we're going to look at all the aspects of vulnerability and how it makes you invulnerable. Tweet me at David Meltzer your favorite takeaway from today's episode and check the show notes to see how you can contact me at any time. This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook. Welcome, welcome, welcome everybody for the simulcast, the IG Live Clubhouse, and of course our webinar simulcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Today's training is on vulnerability, and understanding vulnerability is very important, because vulnerable is being invulnerable. And I know that's counterintuitive, but if we work on being vulnerable, we actually can achieve invulnerability. Let me explain why. Take for example, I like the baby on the sidewalk example. If there was a baby lying on the sidewalk, that is a completely vulnerable being in a vulnerable situation. Nobody would do anything except for help it. There's even animals have been proven they would walk by and try to help. And that's because of its pure energy of defenselessness. The minute we get defensive, it's an attacking energy. We welcome attacks. We attract attacks. When we put up defenses, when we are completely vulnerable, it is truly the essence of invulnerability. And so to start, I think it's important to understand what vulnerability means. And what it really means is that you feel things easily, that you have alignment with your energy, that your energy emotions, your emotions are exposed easily. The truth is exposed easier. Your highest frequency is the truth. Your vibration is elevated. Your awareness is elevated. You actually are someone, when you're vulnerable, that sees the best in people. So obviously with the lens of gratitude, to see light, love, and lessons in everyone is part of being vulnerable, of feeling easy, of being connected to without any type of interference to that true you that makes you so special. You're capable of loving little things and loving people over little things and finding those superpowers in all relationships. A smile can change the way, an intensity of a stare. You get attached very easily to things when you're vulnerable because you give yourself the freedom to feel, F-E-E-L. You give yourself freedom to feel. And it gives you a practice of connecting to that great source that can help you with your awareness and, most importantly, with your happiness. Now, how can we get people to feel comfortable being vulnerable? Because, you know, we have taught to defend ourselves. We don't see the paradox of defense and attack that exists. And we create resistance, voids, and shortages by thinking if we're vulnerable, people will take advantage of us. But it's actually the opposite to be true. And so there's three things that I practice in order to get more comfortable in being vulnerable. One is the practice of self-acceptance. Even though you have your faults, self-acceptance helps you feel more comfortable with being vulnerable to others. When we learn to love ourselves, when we learn to forgive ourselves, we get comfortable with ourselves and comfortable with the snapshots that people have of us. Why is it so difficult in family reunions and holidays? Is because we're growing, expanding, we're learning, we're different people, and we may be put back into a closed situation with someone that has a snapshot from when we were 10 years old, 16 years old, 26 years old, and the judgments and conditions are elevated, and it creates a resistance. It creates frustration, ego-based consciousnesses that put us back into those snapshots and make us have feelings of uncomfortability that we, or shame, blame, and justification of those snapshots from the past when those were just circumstances of learning. So self-awareness and acceptance and allowance of that illumination of those past experiences will help you lower your defenses, which will lower the attacks and the energy of those attacks. One of the other things is that being and feeling comfortable, vulnerable, it prevents you from taking risks. When you are so afraid of what other people will think and seeking the acceptance of others and worried about being invulnerable, vulnerability allows you to take more risks, allows you to accept the process of learning and failing forward and all those great things that everybody teaches you. Vulnerability is key to feel it's okay to feel. It's okay to fail and feel. And it gives you, the third thing, permission to be imperfect. Wouldn't that be nice? To be able to be imperfect, not by what other people feel, but by what you feel about yourself. To rejoice in the imperfections that make us ourselves. To enjoy the imperfections that allow us to transmit our frequency, to attract the people from our lives without chaos or control, without drama, without resistance, without void shortages and obstacles. One of the key components of seeing and looking upon people not as gatekeepers, keeping us from what we want, but more as sponsors and power sponsors is vulnerability. So if vulnerability is so powerful and it's so easy to practice, why are so many people afraid of being vulnerable? Vulnerability makes your mental processing more prone to negativity because you're more prone to making bad decisions and having bad thoughts. Simply, people are afraid of being vulnerable because people can attack them at any time and any day without much effort. But it is counterintuitive because what it's doing is taking the energy out of those attacks. And there's multiple experiences where people illuminate and are completely vulnerable. And it would be very similar to, you know, if you see a baby lying on a sidewalk attacking that baby, who would do such a thing? Nobody. And you need to be that baby on the sidewalk. You need to be comfortable in your invulnerability by being completely vulnerable and exposing who you are and realize that it is not a negative thing if somebody does attack you when you're vulnerable, because it's indicating that you better get far away from that person in the great chain of feeding that those people are kryptonite. You got to get away from that. They are going to suck you and bleed you dry. If somebody's in the mindset of attacking somebody that's being vulnerable, exposing their true feelings and true selves, you don't want to be around it. So you're actually receiving a great blessing if someone does attack you when you're being vulnerable. And trust me, if they're attacking you when you're vulnerable, imagine what they're doing when you're putting up a defense. Imagine what those people are doing around you, how they're bleeding you and what you're doing. I will say, I didn't give those reminders to start it, just see, please, everyone, we're going to do Q&A after this. So put your questions in. Would love to see those in there. And as always, if you have any questions or you want the exercises of invulnerability from this, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. All right, moving forward. So what's the importance of being vulnerable? It's important to be vulnerable because doing so allows us to share the things which have hurt us. It exposes where we feel that insecurity and feel compassion in that act of sharing where we have been exposed and where we have been hurt. And therefore, that same vulnerability allows us to share that experience and think about the good points about being vulnerable and see the strength in using the attribute of vulnerability in order to effectuate connecting and emotionally connecting to others. And the key is right there. If we take control of our fears, we can use our vulnerabilities not to harm ourselves and others, but to help others come out of their shell and encourage you to open and let go of your feelings to others. I had a client fly in and, you know, Harvard grad, flew in on his private jet and big meeting at the Ritz-Carlton. And I asked him what I love to ask people when I first start out is, tell me what you're doing today, what you like about it, what don't you like about it? And all I got was a long litany of invulnerability, of huge successes, of growing up and, you know, success after success, school after school, business deal, public company exit, success after success. And then this individual asked me, oh, so tell me about yourself. And I basically went through that journey of mine, of vulnerability, of understanding the dummy tax that I paid and the failures or lessons that I've learned and losing everything and the stupid things that I did and how this occurred. And, you know, my true feelings about those things within the journey that I had. And it was so funny because the energy changed so quickly that instead of bragging or showing me his invulnerability, all of a sudden as well, and all the stories about what has really happened and how he really felt came out, and we bonded and didn't have to put up those fronts that create resistance and voids and shortages, because vulnerability and invulnerability are a clear interference between you and others. True intimacy does not reside outside a vulnerable state of mind. Because all of the heartbreak and divorces and being vulnerable is probably the scariest action in a relationship that you could have, to truly let someone know who you are and let them in. And people are so afraid of that. They're afraid of what? They're afraid of being hurt, rejected, left, that they create a person that doesn't even exist so that they can't feel the pain of rejection, of being left, of separation. And here again, people build these walls, create false personalities. They lie, they oversell, manipulate, they cheat people to create protection against their feelings, their own feelings. They do try to engage in intimacy, but they'll hold back. They'll be uninvolved. They'll be scarce in their feelings and communications. But if we keep ourselves locked away during intimate times and intimate relationships, we'd rather pretend like these intimate acts that have occurred are no big deal, or simply walk away from potentially healthy relationships and opportunities because we are too afraid of being vulnerable. Vulnerability will help you wade through the maybes and find the one who is truly right for you in life and business. Intimacy with the right person will be amazing if you are completely vulnerable, or at least practice progressing towards the potential of being vulnerable. Vulnerability to me is the cleaner of interference. It is both the cleaner of interference between you and the truth, the source, the light, the love, but also you and everything else. Vulnerability is the process in which we clean the interference between you and everything else, especially others that we want to be intimate with. Vulnerability allows us to forgive, the greatest source of peace and certainty in our life, and allows us to be empathetic. If someone else is being vulnerable about something negative that they've done, instead of getting angry straight off, you will have much more compassion. This is where being vulnerable comes in. Being a person who can exhibit vulnerability, attributes that can help others who are also trying to be vulnerable, because they can either relate or they can help the other person put away their shame, blame, and justification. It changes your perspective from below the line in a world of liability to above the line in a world of accountability. It takes you from blame, shame, and justification into those two wonderful questions of vulnerability. What did I do to attract this to myself? And what am I supposed to learn from it? Both questions are indicative of vulnerability, allowing us to find our true selves, expose our true selves, illuminate the truth in any situation. And the truth is, we're human, we're hypocrites, we're learning, we're changing. We only know an infinitesimal size and scope and scale of information, and the rest is unknown. That we are trying to live for just an instant between this limitlessness and infinity that allows us to have the humility to be vulnerable, and to allow that vulnerability to come forth. Now, our mindset in this vulnerability is crucial. And, you know, we were talking about snapshots in that mindset, that we look to the past to create defenses. We look to the past to create attacks, judgments, and conditions. We think that everyone knows all aspects of our past in order to evaluate who we are today, and it causes all types of separation, interference, void shortages, and obstacles. But our past is there not to define us and to create invulnerability or to create, you know, resistance. Our past is there to design us. And the more that we share our design, our blueprints of who we are and why we are and how we became, the better we will be in allowing us to live in the moment of where we're at and take into consideration who, where, and what, and how are viewing us. Another example I give, I tell a story about my maturation and vulnerability. For my 50th birthday a few years ago, I went on a campaign to have around the world one birthday party basically a week. I called it the 50 for 50, a takeoff from the 30 for 30 in the sports world. But I was going to do 50 birthday parties for charity to raise money to buy community centers in Kenya for the Unstoppable Foundation. And by the way, one of the most challenging things you can do is to have a birthday party every week. It is emotionally draining, but well worth it. And the very first one I did, I invited all my family, all my friends, and I had an uncle that hadn't seen me in years. And he sat at the table with the executive board of the Unstoppable Foundation with my family, my wife, and half jokingly, he said to the people at the Unstoppable Foundation, "I wonder how much money David's making for putting on this party." And my wife was super offended. She couldn't believe, you know, that he would say that and how that looked, et cetera. And when she told me, my initial reaction was an ego-based response of a need to be offended. I can't believe that. And then I thought about vulnerability, and I thought about how my past had designed me. And but for the fact that that person that he hadn't seen since I was 18 years old, the person at 18 years old probably would look for an angle in order to effectuate a personal gain in an unconditional response to giving. And it was a major leap for me to accept the fact of my design, to accept the fact that it doesn't define, and to be able to articulate the vulnerability and acceptance of, you're right. You know what? When I was 18, I definitely would have probably tried to figure out how to oversell, manipulate, figure out how I could benefit personally from every trade negotiation, even in a philanthropic manner. But today, those experiences have designed me in order to be abundant and to live in this world of more than enough and to gain the opportunity to give and to change people and impact them and empower others to be happy through my capability of raising money and donating money and making money. And yet that snapshot still exists. I can't change it. I can't change the snapshots of the people that went to elementary school, middle school, undergrad, high school, grew up with me in my 20s, worked with me with all the different mindset and lessons that I've learned. I can't erase that definition that they have, that snapshot, but all of those have designed me to be who I am today. And the only way I can walk in the higher light is to expose that of myself and illuminate it for others so that they can learn that design and they may not have to make the same mistakes or pay the same dummy tax. In order to do this, in order to create a design of vulnerability through vulnerability, in order to forgive ourselves for the snapshots of the past that may not be our highest self or just in circumstance of how we've learned and where we've learned, we need to enjoy the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit pursuit of our happiness, of our potential. Every single day, we have to design ourselves and learn from it. And not being vulnerable means we become numb to our true feelings, that we live a facade, an alter ego effect that will have no fulfillment, passion, purpose, or profitability. It means that resentment that is pent up inside of us, the need to be offended, and the shame that hides underneath those feelings of unhappiness, well, just those bad feelings hiding away, the good feelings are doing the same thing. You cannot possibly truly be happy unless you're vulnerable. It won't work. You cannot consistently, persistently pursue your potential without being vulnerable. And the varying degrees of vulnerability allow you to learn more, allow you to suffer less interference, avoid shortages and obstacles and attacks. Without vulnerability, you are a fake. And anyone who you try to love will be a fake as well. You will, at least most of the time, not live within your potential or truth. So to be happy, to find truly happy person you like to be with and attract them without judgments and conditions, without attacks, stop holding all of that good and bad inside and be vulnerable, consistently vulnerable. Illuminate who you are and what you've learned. It's fine. Once you release the truth, nobody can hold it against you, right? If I went into a business meeting and never told anyone that I was a complete idiot and I lost over $100 million and I went bankrupt and I didn't tell anyone, right? I love to tell people what I've learned and what I've experienced. Can they hold that? Oh, you know, Dave, you lost, you know, I don't want to do business. Well, I'm going to tell you up front. If you don't want to do business with me or you don't want to have me help you for whatever reason it is because I lost everything, at least you know, but you can't hold it against me or attack me for it. But what happens is people try to be invulnerable and they go ahead and omit or lie about things. And the minute somebody finds out, oh boy, right now they call on the info hound dogs and the access that we have to information and the credibility, the number one priority of what we try to do to get in alignment is released immediately. And now all we are is in a wormhole of trying to gather as much information to discredit you. Look, if you seek in any human being, you know, what's the saying? If you crawl far enough up the rear side of someone, you're going to find what? Poop. That's what you're going to find. So don't go searching for the poop. Go ahead and illuminate the poop so people are looking for the good stuff of what you learned and move on and move forward together with invulnerability to be vulnerable. Inspiration clears that interference between you and what you're connected to. Vulnerability can also be a benefit in the workplace. So many people are afraid to speak up about new ideas or criticisms at work, especially in meetings or in the presence of superiors or even inferiors as staged. But if you can become courageous enough to voice your concerns, you'll open up a dialogue that makes coworkers tap into the vulnerability as well. How many times that someone asks a question that you say, oh, thank God, I wanted to know that. If you want to see your coworkers making connections, even remotely, then vulnerability is the key. The more that we can be comfortable being vulnerable. I give a dummy tax award at my company to encourage vulnerability. So we go around the room every month and we discuss the number one mistake that we made and the lessons that we've learned and the damage or whatever the repercussions were to not only help everyone learn from those mistakes, but to teach vulnerability and to clear the interference as a group between one another so that we all feel comfortable in the uncomfortable situation of admitting who we really are and what we're really learning. Your ideas and concerns can also profit your workplace as a whole. As much as I bonus, and it's a big bonus for whoever wins that award, I have gained the most because as a collective, they've learned the lesson of not only what those mistakes were in the vulnerable moment of illuminating the issues and the lessons learned, but moreover, the more that we create a culture of openness, of comfortability, the less attacks, judgments, and conditions. Has anyone worked for a job where all we do is have chaos and commotion and drama because people are trying to look for the void shortages and obstacles in others instead of trying to find the superpowers that exist within the vulnerability and the stories and the lessons that people have learned? Being vulnerable is a strength in your intimate relationships, your personal life, and your work life. But vulnerability is not easy. Can you imagine everyone being honest? How many good and bad consequences would come from this one action? Is being vulnerable popular? Then many good things would happen if we could at least make it popular. Why? Because everyone would be inspired. everyone would pursue the truth. More and more people would be comfortable with what they've done and the snapshots of their life and the continuum and journey of where they're at, and be able to apply the knowledge and the relationships necessary in order to provide the progress that we're looking for, not the perfection. Invulnerability exists in a perfect world, and we don't live there. Vulnerability lives in the world we live in, understanding that we will fail forward, that we can feel forward, F-E-E-L, forward, and understand our vulnerability will provide the closest shield of invulnerability, because we will take away the energies in the attack. Seeking approval is the number one people feel they can't be vulnerable. Being vulnerable in a vulnerable state's not easy, as I suggested, and it means that you have to tear down those interferences walls. You have to tear down and let go of your guard and open wide to the world of who you truly are, to loved ones, friends, and workplace associates. And it's hard to be vulnerable because some people feel it's a weakness, and it makes you to be exposed and out of control. And our society has taught us so many negative things, that lying fixes problems, stealing gets you what you want, manipulation, overselling, back-end selling, and being hard and tough saves you and protects you, especially from your feelings. I wish I could heal the whole of society from the horrible misconception about vulnerability. For now, let's look at a few ways, and one in particular that has benefited you as an individual. Think about it. We will provide you an exercise to go through. If you email me at david@dmeltzer.com, I'll be happy to send you that exercise of looking at how being vulnerable can benefit you, and opening up is your best solution to being invulnerable and worthy. When we seek approvals of others, they will distance themselves from you. This is called disapproval. Nobody likes someone that is always seeking approval. We don't like to be around them. You must feel worthy in order to be vulnerable. I know it sounds strange, but your self-esteem gets higher the more vulnerable that you become. All that bragging and showing how tough you are, how wealthy you are, how happy you are, especially in social media, standing in front of cars you don't own, houses you don't own, sharing some false facade of happiness. No, be vulnerable. Let people know the difficulties, challenges, and the lessons that you've learned. Don't live below the line in liability with blame, shame, and justification. Rise to the top of accountability and tell people, this is what I did to attract this to my life, and this is what I learned from it. It is okay to feel shame. It's okay sometimes to feel that you're not worthy, and not something that someone told you made you feel that way. But vulnerability can make you realize that both strengths and weaknesses exist within the context of vulnerability. And this is what will help you realize your true worth and where you need to work on and what you need to work on to take inventory of your values. I appreciate everyone for being so vulnerable and taking the time to be here. Please, today, let's look at those snapshots in our lives that we may not be as proud of. Illuminate them and share them with the people that we're closest to, our family, friends, associates, in order to clear the interference, the protection that we have. Let's dissolve these negative thoughts, judgments, and conditions that are created. If anyone wants to reach out to me, it's just david@dmeltzer.com. Anyone wants my book, reach out to me at shipmeyourbook.com. Happy to send it out. Pay for shipping there. Next week's training's on how to utilize no. So if you look at no as a positive or a negative, you definitely want to come to the training. How to utilize no is next week's training. We'll have exercises, guides, books, david@dmeltzer.com. You can always join my text community as well, 949-298-2905. Now my favorite time of the day. It's time for the Q&A. Let's really see what you want to know. Remember, it's not whether people are listening. It's what they're listening for. And this is how I find out what you're listening for. I'm going to bring up first Aaron Wexler as I talk and answer a question here on the webinar. In terms of your ego, what do you struggle with the most? Well, I think Spending minutes and moments in ego is what I struggle with the most. I'm getting pretty good at identifying all the needs of the ego, whether it's primary needs of the ego, the Freudian needs of flight, feed, fight, or the other F word, or is it the secondary need to be offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, greedy, guilty, whatever it may be. In terms of the ego, I struggle the most with being able to be a ferocious Buddha and not trying to resist it, overcome it, go around it, under it, through it, oversell it, back and sell it, lie to it, manipulate or cheat it, simply to stop and put myself back into my higher frequency, into that vulnerable state of peace and center. So for me, my biggest struggle is to spend minutes and moments in ego-based consciousness, not days, weeks, months, and years. All right, here we go. Aaron, what do you got for me, my friend?
Hey, David, how you doing, man? Good to talk with you. You know, I'm actually just about to interview Craig Siegel right now, so this is kind of perfect, and that's a full circle moment because you introduced me to him through your IG Live, so much appreciation. And, you know, my question for you that I think could help a lot of people here, because this is what Craig is talking about. He's talking about the mindset of excellence. And my question for you is, how important is modeling and anchoring when it comes to mindset?
Yeah. So number one, the modeling side of mindset, I think is, you know, important in understanding the formulaic way that people learn for themselves. So for me, I create a context that's based off of values and daily practices in order to model the mindset, which I have control of. And so in modeling that mindset, I have, you know, lenses that I use of gratitude and forgiveness, accountability and inspiration, lenses of productivity, accessibility and graciousness. And then I have, in the context of the model, matrixing different variables of daily activities of, you know, the what, the who, the how, the now, and the why. And so I think it's really important to model your mindset. And then anchoring in is just a matter for everything. For me, the definition of anchoring in is to be consistent. And within the context of consistency is a realm of persistence. So not only am I consistent every day, but persistent. And to anchor in, I have to learn to love that process. If you can build any muscle, I would love for you to build a consistent muscle, what I call a habit machine, because if you can apply being consistent to anything, you then have a much more statistical success in finding the light, the love, and the lessons, or learning to love everything you do, because consistency, formulatic methodology in order to effectuate not only the efficiencies, effectiveness, and statistical success of mindset, but actually the mindset itself by providing data and creating habits within being consistent and persistent. So number one, you need to find the model that's right for you. Two, you need to anchor in with consistent, persistent behavior to effectuate that in the most efficient, effective, and statistically successful way. Did that answer your question, Aaron?
Oh, wow. That was amazing. I wish we could record on here, man.
Well, I got a recording. Thank you, I got a recording other places, so we'll send that out. You can also, all the trainings for anyone, I have it on the playbook. So next week on Monday, just download the training. It's on the my podcast, The Playbook. So we do record these if anyone wants to replay, because I talk fast and there's not time to take notes. Happy to send you my guides, exercises, and notes as well. So thanks for bringing that up, Aaron. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, David. Appreciate you.
Right on. All right. Next, we'll bring up Joseph Storzinger, a friend of mine. I'm going to read a question off of the webinar. I talk about persistency a lot, and somebody asked how to work on being persistent. And I think the number one way to work on persistency is to study time. You cannot see time in a linear fashion if you want to be persistent, because persistent without quit is such a difficult thing if you look at the man-made construct of time in a linear sense, because we don't mind hard, but we hate long. And if we look at things in a linear sense about being persistent, that things take longer than they should in perception because of compound interest, because of Einstein's rule of 72 in compound interest, because of exponential growth acceleration, and how consistency interplays with the persistent behavior that we have. So you have to study time to understand that time itself is working within the context of itself and spiraling in its nature. It's not in a longevity of a linear sense. sense that if you put things into a segmented amount of time, it's going to take you 90% of the time that you think it's going to take you to get to 25% of the way there. That is if you are consistent and persistent. And then it's going to take you 95% of the time you thought it was going to take just to get to 50% of the way there. So in your mind, in a linear sense, in the man-made construct sense, what causes the most difficulty about being persistent is that most people quit, 99.9% of them quit before they get to even 25% of the way there, because they expect to be 25% of the way there and 25% of the time. They expect to be 50% of the way there and 50% of the time, but it takes 90% of the time to get to 25% of the way there and almost 100% of the time to get to halfway there. And so you have to study time in order to effectuate and work on persistency. You have to allow yourself to be as aggressive as you can, persistent as you can, but it needs to be tempered with patience to allow things to happen, to angle to what you want by learning the lesson, seeing pain as an indicator, to have faith to get to somewhere better. And the only way that you can work on your persistency is work on your perception of time. All right, my friend, Joseph Storzinger, what do you got for me?
David, my brother, good to talk to you. Just coming off that rock you love, Manhattan. We miss you here. I love this topic. My question around vulnerability, I guess, leads to when you are being vulnerable, and, you know, there's sort of like, I feel like this cancel culture going on, where, you know, you get these comments or whatever. I've been involved with some companies, obviously, we have to be very vulnerable in, but then you get these comments that are coming from another totally different direction. Do you go down the road of, you know, just, I guess it's, do you go down the road of trying to have that person understand your vulnerability, or is it sort of like you just, after three times or two times of them not understanding, you just move on?
That's a great question. Thank you, Joseph. So, you know, we have this blend of when we're being honest, and sometimes our honesty is not accepted by others. And whether you want to call it a cancel culture or hypersensitivity or just sensitivity in general, is that we cannot control what other people think. And so what we want to do is try to appreciate where they're coming from. And what I have found is that when someone may have a knee-jerk reaction of canceling the truth, and the truth has its own snapshot. And I think that's the difficulty of you know, the cancel culture, Joseph, is that, you know, these things that we do, the snapshots that you take, I don't want to be judged when I was 18 years old for anything that I did, because I'm not the same person, and it doesn't define me who I am at 53, but it designed me. And so what I'd love to do is share in the lessons of what was going on and what we've learned from there and appreciate someone else's position. But sometimes their ego, and I think this is where you find some resistance, won't allow them to share that understanding. And so sometimes when we can't, it's called a closed mind. When we can't re-engineer a mind, we know that it takes 1,000 times the energy to re-engineer that closed mind that it does to align and to inspire an open mind. So all I do is I allow it to fall away. And if it won't fall away because of situational circumstances, I fire it from my life, but I do not allow it to bleed me. I do not allow it to define me. I will only allow it to work with me, collaborate with me in a commandment of working with. That's what the word command works. We will command each other to our higher selves, learn from the mistakes of the past, of what we are being vulnerable about. And if they can't accept it, I'm going to move on to the 1,000 open minds with the energy that I have. And I will pray for their happiness and appreciate the effort that we gave to align and understanding. Does that sound fair?
Very fair. Love you, brother. Look forward to seeing you soon, man.
I can't wait to get to New York. That's my whole New York crew coming in. I love Clubhouse and webinars and Instagram Live. I get to see everyone.
Veronica.
Oh, it's amazing. I'm driving in my car, you know, on Clubhouse.
Yeah, it's much safer than being on Zoom in the car. So good job. All right, Veronica. Thank you, man. Veronica Svok, T-S-V-O-K. I'm going to take a question online and then I'll get right to you.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much, Veronica. How to get less defensive when criticized? Okay, You got to stop, drop, and roll. Everyone's, you know, people will laugh at you, scoff at you, criticize you, make fun of you. Then they will applaud you. But you don't have to create more resistance and get defensive when someone's telling you what you can't do or what they think you can do or what they want for you. So many people waste so much time, energy, emotion to get to where they want to be by worrying about where other people are telling them they are or they can be. Don't do it. All you got to do is practice being a ferocious Buddha. Practice stopping when somebody criticizes you. Don't resist it. Don't become defensive. Don't try to defend it or oversell it or deny it or go over it or under it or attack it. No. The best thing to do is stop. Get to your center, understand what they're saying, and just tell them, I appreciate it. What is appreciation? Adding value, right? Your house appreciates, it goes up in value. Appreciate people for what they want for you. Even if it's not what you want for yourself, appreciate the fact that you're significant enough, that they care enough to go ahead and criticize you. That you actually have established enough of a statement of who you are that they're taking their most valuable resource, time, and giving it to you. It's like micromanaging. People will tell me all the time when I'm coaching them, you know, what am I going to do? My superior is micromanaging me. I'm like, thank him, thank her, please. So what do you mean thank them? Well, because they care about you. They're paying attention and giving intention into you, and you're getting defensive instead of appreciating the fact that they are trying to share their opinion. You are not forced to believe what they believe, but you are given an opportunity to understand where they're coming from, what they like, what they don't like, what they've learned, what dummy tax they've experienced, what relationships they have, how they can be of service to you, and more importantly, how you can be of service to them. All of this comes when people interact, even in criticism. So don't resist it. Just stop, drop, and roll. Remember, when people criticize you and you get mad and defensive, your mind, your body, and soul are on fire. When you're on fire, stop, drop, and roll. Put it out. Veronica, thank you for your patience. What do you have for me?
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me up here. So I am in my final year of university. It's obviously a weird time to come into the job market. So my question is a little bit twofold, and a lot to do with your stance on persistence, which I love. I was just wondering, a big thing I do right now is reaching out to people at companies I'm interested in. Obviously, networking is beyond key. And what is really like the fine line between persistence and more than that when you're trying to reach someone and you're not getting through to them? And then on the other side of that, I was just wondering, how do I, in this market of so many people weren't able to have experience in the past summer, the past couple of years, how do I make myself stand out amongst other entry-level applicants?
Absolutely. So two things. One, when do we know the blend of persistence and annoyance? Yeah, I think that's a very common thing when people are applying for jobs or in a closing situation in business. Where's the line, Dave, between being persistent and annoying and where I'm damaging the possibility? Here's what I do. I institute a 3-no rule, which is our training. Our relationship with no is going to be our training next week. And this is part of it. I love the 3-no rule. And so the 3-no rule tells me that regardless of the circumstance, career, business, or life, personal, if I make the ask 3 times and on the 3rd time, and I, for whatever reason, I don't get the response that I want, or I may not even get a response, on the 3rd time, I go ahead and let the universe help me. Help me determine whether or not I have an opportunity at this time, whether or not it's the right place or the perfect time. So I go ahead and leave a message saying, hey, obviously this isn't the right place or the perfect time. I've tried 3 times to get in touch with you in order to effectuate an interview or close the deal or whatever it is. I have other opportunities that I must attend to. I really would love to share this opportunity or participate in this opportunity or work towards this opportunity. When it is the right time in the right place, please reach out to me, and I go ahead and let it go. 50% or so of the time, you know, guys all know my philosophy of percentage of statistics, right? 99% of statistics are made up. So I'm going to tell you 50% or so of the time, people will get back to me. The other 50% of the time, I never hear from them again. And I actually value the people who never get back to me, because I believe the people that got back to me, I've accelerated the time frame in which they got back to me, which saves me some time, but I would have gotten that connection sooner or later. I just accelerated that with a compelling event of fear of loss, the walking away aspect of the no situation. But more valuable to me is the 50% of the people I never talk to again, because I have wasted so much time, emotion, money, resources, and energy and relationships persistently being that OCD, anal retentive, I'm not going to quit and I'm going to keep on pushing. And those people that don't get back to me never would. And I'm better off using all of that time asking people in person on the phone via email or social media, do you know anyone that can help me? I'm trying to get a position in this industry, career, job, company, or venue, whatever it may be. And I have a much higher statistical success treating everyone as a power sponsor and sponsor and not a gatekeeper and not trying to knock my head against the same wall thinking I'm going to get a different result. Does that sound like something that would help you?
That sounds very, very helpful. Thank you.
Awesome. And then the second part of your question is you be you. I had a wonderful woman today that told me, you know, she had sent all these resumes and, you know, and I said, whoa, use your power. You came on here. I forget. I was on Clubhouse yesterday, I think it was. And she had the biggest personality, the best energy. She was so lovely. And I'm like, you got to use that. You got to get in front of people on the platforms where you can show off your superpowers. And so be out there listening for the things that people tell you. Wow, how do you do that? And use those things in order to effectuate where you want to be. And remember, everyone has different skills, knowledge, and desire. And when you can utilize all these different resources to find where there's synergy and it's supplemented to something that is doing well or stable or something you think will be doing well, you're going to increase those statistical success. So everybody out there, don't just look for the superpowers in everybody else. Look for them within yourself. And if you don't know what they are, listen to other people when they say, how do you do that? Wow, you're good at that. Unbelievable. And you'll start realizing where your superpowers lie. And I know you also, Veronica, have tons of superpowers. Use them and you will be statistically successful in your venture.
Thank you so much, David. It was very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Come back. We love you. All right, Gigi, you're our next. Let me take a question on the line here. I love that, on the line. You guys remember that? Can you talk more about what attacking thoughts are and how to get rid of them? So first of all, attacking thoughts are ones that you have. And we attack ourselves so much. They're the thoughts about what's missing, what we don't like, what we don't want, what other people want for us. These are all attacking thoughts. Defensive thoughts are attacking thoughts. Anything that disrupts what we already are. And I think, you know, just shifting the paradigm of your own value, your own worthiness, your own perception of I am healthy, I am wealthy, I am happy. What am I doing to interfere with what I am already? Because I know I am, because I'm connected to infinity and limitlessness. I'm connected to the greatest source of power, light, and lessons that exists. I am all of that. And what am I doing to interfere with that? What I do to interfere with what I'm already connected to and through are my attacking thoughts. And I utilize in my book, Connected to Goodness, the cancel, clear, connect process, where I cancel the negative attacking thoughts, I clear them from my mind, and I actually shift my energy through a connection process that's taught in there. And I can send anyone you want a guide on cancel, clear, connect, or I'm happy to send my book, shipmeyourbook.com. But everything, if you forget anything, just remember my email. I will answer it, david@dmeltzer.com. Please, I will give you, it's free, promise. Just go ahead and reach out. I am happy to help. Stop having attacking thoughts. Cancel, clear, and connect them. Gigi, my friend, you are up with the next question.
Hi, David. I think this is your best training so far.
And you.
I'm on this, speaking of synchronicity, I'm actually reading Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, and she talks about vulnerability and all of this. And I have a two-part question. One is, how do we create more safe spaces, because we grew up in an environment that taught us the opposite, or, you know, showed us the opposite. And also, when you talk to someone that doesn't know how to listen, like, they just jump solution and you need that. and you're vulnerable, and that hurts a lot. Like, how can I protect from that? Or just be aware, like, because they're a family, like, you can't cut them. So how do I protect myself from that? So how can I provide more safe spaces with the right people? And sure. Also, how do I protect myself from the people who aren't able to be vulnerable and aren't capable to be vulnerable yet?
Yes. And many people are not capable of many things. As we're on our own journey, we're learning, accelerating, raising our awareness and building our enlightenment. So safe places, how do we find those safe places? Well, safe places exist with the right people and the right ideas. And so number one, we have to raise our awareness and our habits to identify when we're not in a safe place, when people are putting judgments and conditions on us, they're creating chaos and interference in our lives. They create void shortages and obstacles for us. And the key component of how we know when we're in a safe place or identify it is how we feel, which is directly related to our vulnerability. So if we don't feel good when we are watching something, listening to something, if we don't feel good, then we need to either figure out how to re-engineer it to feel good. And if we can't, we may want to move to a different place around different people and different ideas until we figure out how we can feel good around those people, those ideas, or those places. And so use the litmus test of your feelings in order to effectuate the location in which you feel the best, or at least be what I call in the learning zone. We don't want to always live our life in a comfort zone. That's what the idea of being invulnerable is about, is when we're vulnerable, we're in the learning zone. And how do we deal with not exceeding the learning zone into the anxiety zone? Because if we live in an anxiety zone where we're worried about what other people think, and my dear friend Sharon Lecter, right? What is worrying? Wishing for what you didn't want. But if we're living in the anxiety zone, things are going to compress. If we live in the learning zone with vulnerability, we're going to expand and grow. And pretty soon, what used to make us anxious will now make us comfortable. And the size of our comfort zone in my life, my goal is always to pursue that learning so that my anxiety zone is the size of my comfort zone. What's outside my old anxiety zone is now my learning zone. And then I have a brand new comfortability in my life that I'm willing and can expand and grow even farther. That's how people get so much done. Now, the second aspect is, what do we do with people that don't understand this? So there's a great chain of feeding, and you have to go ahead and place people in a variance. If they feed you, feed them. If they don't and aren't willing to understand your vulnerability, aren't willing to be vulnerable, then let them fall away until they are. And then if they're attacking you and they are bleeding you, then fire them. And there's a variance of all that spectrum. I call it the great feeding chain. If it feeds you, feed it. If it doesn't feed you, allow it to fall away in its varying degrees. And if it's attacking you or bleed you, then all the way up to the variance of fire them from your life. All of that within the context of how you feel and what you've learned. Thank you, Gigi. I know you have experienced all that and you're doing such a great job. I appreciate you probably in the middle of the night from the other side of the world joining us. So thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, next we'll bring up one of my favorite NFL players, Andre. They call him Andre Flew Allen. They'll call him the flu, but I know people misinterpret when I call the man the flu. Let me take a quick question online, Andre, and then we'll get to yours. Here we go. Is it a habit or a skill we will build and gain? Okay. A habit is the ability to repeat a skill. So skills reside within the capabilities that you have. Skills, knowledge of what and who and desire, and the habit will encompass and aggregate all of those so that you can be consistent and persistent in the skill. And the skill will exponentially grow, accelerate, and build upon itself, that exponentiality, the compound interest, if you create a habit around that skill. So they're actually part and parcel to each other. They're complementary of one another. A skill is a subset of a habit, and you can build and gain skills and appreciate them through consistent, persistent behavior that will become either a conscious habit, subconscious, and the 40,000 of the same neural pathway habit, or even quantum habit, which resides within the context of your own quantum being, your DNA. But I get a little bit too woo-woo when I get excited. So thank you so much for that question. What's up, Andre? What do you got for me?
What's up, man? So I got a good one for you. So I know that you are, I wouldn't say against ego, but you're against, I guess, oppressive egos, okay? So here's a question I've been pondering over the last few days is, how does someone, myself, anybody else, like how does somebody sell ego in situations where they have to when they feel like they're actually against it? All right, so here's an example I would say is, all right, so my birthday's in 2 days. And so you know how you're going to go to the Louis Vuitton store and you're going to buy me something out of there? All right.
Yeah.
So, exactly. All right. So everybody heard it. But you know how the people who work in there, like there's almost this sense of if you don't buy anything from there, you are worthless, right? The workers in there. And so, but that's their job to sell ego. So how, if somebody's out there, if it's selling like, you know, luxury cars or even selling baseball cards, you know, how do you sell ego when you are in fact almost against ego? Because that's something that I've been, that's been bugging me lately. Does that make sense?
It's so cool.
Yeah, it does. So, you know, I am not against anything. I am for things. And so understanding that we can't give an egoectomy. People ask me all the time, if I could cure one thing, what would it be? It wouldn't even be the coronavirus. To me, it would be the ego. If I could cure it, so that everybody could spend minutes and moments in ego instead of days, weeks, months, and years. What I think we're talking about is more the understanding of utilizing ego in a certain way. And it is manipulative, could be overselling, back-end selling. And one thing about the ego that's interesting in the context of getting what we want is that it's consistent. And I think, you know, studying human nature by studying history and doing the things that I've done in the context of studying ego, the ego-based consciousness of what we need, it's amazing because the thing I love about the ego when I'm trying to help somebody fill their ego is that the ego needs to be fed and will be fed faster than anything else that's out there. So, for example, the need to be offended, the need to be right, the need to be anxious. If you feed it, it will get fed immediately. You could step out the door right now with the need to be offended and you're going to be offended. And so if we have an ego need to buy things that we don't need to be happy, different things to be happy, buy things to impress people we don't like, you know, one of the biggest counterintuitive complex things that I find is most of the people that work at luxury item stores can't afford what they're selling. But yet they somehow make us feel bad about ourselves. They utilize the ego of feeling separate and inferior in order to effectuate a sale. And so for me, it's being aware and being a ferocious Buddha to one, identify my ego-based consciousness, because there's certain things that I have control of in my ego and others, like the need to be offended, that I just, it won't go away. And I keep on practicing at least spending less time there every day, but it's there every single day. Where I have effectuated a maturation and a learning, I don't have a need to buy things I don't need. I don't have an egotistical thing to buy different things because I have taken out the scarcity of what I have. I have learned to readjust the paradigm of I much rather spend my money helping other people with what they truly need, allowing things to come through me, like building villages and hospitals and scholarships. And I just look at things and I make a comparative economic analysis saying, is this Louis Vuitton purse I'm going to buy for Andre's birthday worth more than an education for a ninth grader in Kenya, Africa to go to continue her education so her family can have water and food and medical care so she doesn't have to stay at home? Those are the things that we do. So I would say this is a journey of being a ferocious Buddha. Learn to identify your own ego-based consciousness and then try to identify others and maximize the abundance in the situation by getting the alignment between the two. Does that sound fair?
Absolutely, man. Awesome. Thank you so much.
The flu, man. He's the man. Happy birthday. I will be sending out a gift. It is noon time, top of the hour. I'm going to turn into a pumpkin. So I got to get out of here. I enjoy everybody. Please reach out to me, david@dmeltzer.com. Next week's training is about learning to deal with no and having the right mindset, heart set, and conscious continuum around no. david@dmeltzer.com. All of the exercises, guides available for free from today. The playbook will show you the replays, so just download the playbook. Spotify, it's featured on. Entrepreneur features it. Apple, Google, everybody features it. Just grab the playbook. You'll love these trainings the second time because you can actually take notes and slow me down to half speed and learn what we're talking about. Thank you, everybody, so much. Reach out to me, david@dmeltzer.com. And remember, most importantly, everyone, be kind to your future self and do good deeds. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you like. My only ask is you help me empower others to be happy.